The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Guess who's back, back again. Shady's back, tell a friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm Paul Elia, and my co-hosts are fellow Agile Upriser Brad Stokes.
Hey, hey.
And back for a visit is one of our founders, Ryan Lockard. Ryan, welcome back.
Hey, guys.
And our topic for today is, what are some challenges of working in the world of transformation that differ when you're a consultant versus when you're a full-time employee? And this really struck a nerve. We threw this topic out for debate on our Slack channel, and everybody wanted to pile in. So we're going to tell you guys in advance, who are our listeners, if you're one of those that consume these podcasts when they first come out, there's a chance for you for part two to get your questions in, to get some engagement. And we'd really like to hear from you. So I'm going to ask you now, be thinking about what this conversation does for you and what questions you have and what you wish we would discuss, and shoot that to us at podcast.agileuprising.com/contact, or just use the contact navigation link. And part two is going to be brought to you by a whole new group of folks here, so we'll get a bunch of different points of view. But I wanted to start us off appropriately. So Ryan's on the road, as he is a lot these days, and that's one of the aspects of being in this world and being a consultant, is life on the road. So Ryan, I wanted to ask you, how are you doing? Where are you at? What's going on?
I think how are you doing is a loaded question, right? There's ups and downs with every job. It doesn't matter if you're a consultant or if you're a full-time employee or if you're unemployed or what it is. Like, how you're doing is a transient question. But right now, sitting in Midtown Manhattan, specifically, I think I'm on 35th between 7th and 8th. I'm not too far away from my consulting company's headquarters, at least the U.S. headquarters. Like I said, right here in New York. Tomorrow, I jump a plane. I'm going to see an amazing client down in the Atlanta region on Thursday. And then I have some new hire orientation that I'm going to jump into on Friday in the Atlanta region as well. So typical week is I don't book any travel until Saturday or Sunday for the coming week. And that's when I figure out which cities I'll be enjoying that coming set of 5 days with my family in Philadelphia.
So it's not that full-timers might not have a little travel going on too, but for consultants, it's a lot of times it's a bigger percentage of time on the road, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, so I did 17 years in the enterprise setting, right? Like, not doing this consulting gig, and in various different jobs, I had travel. It's just the nature of our gig, right? We talk about agile groups having co-location is a massive win. If you're working with a co-located team, you have quicker, you go quicker through the four stages of team dynamics and you build empathy quicker. But the reality is most large organizations have some degree of distribution. If you look at Mark Kirby's definition, if you have one remote member on a team, you have a distributed team. And a lot of the organizations I work with are heavily distributed. So even full-timers are putting seat time on planes or getting on a train or working through Sikuko or WebEx or Zoom or something like that to bring teams closer together. So the fact that I can sit here and gripe and bellyache about having to travel 5 days a week isn't unique to consulting. It's a reality of the 21st century and how we're bringing software to market.
So when you say it's not just the purview of the consultant. I would say that the consultant, though, is probably more mobile regardless, even if you've got the odd employee that's going to site up. If you've got a developer or a scrum master or whatever, they tend to be where they are and they might travel on the odd occasion, whereas it seems to be very much, especially in the States, let's go for where we have to. In Australia, we're a little luckier. We've got two or three major centers that we tend to work out of. But in the States, it could be any city in any of the states that are there. So is it more a consultant gig that happens all the time, or is it just the employees don't travel quite as often because it's just not required? Or is it the level that you operate at?
I was wondering that as well. Even with the full-timers, if you coach higher in the levels and your organization is geographically distributed, you probably do hit the plane more.
So I'll try to answer, like, there's a couple different layers in there to unpack. And what I'll do is I'll ask both Brad and Paul to keep me honest and make sure I hit as many as I can. But then I'd actually reflect that question back on both of you guys, because I know you both work in contexts that have representation in that answer. So for me personally, what I'll do is, for any new listeners or anybody that's not familiar with who I am and what I do, I kind of jumped into answering questions without setting context. So I work for a global DevOps cloud agile consulting company. We specifically target large enterprise companies that are heavily regulated and are looking to transform the way that they're working today. The company is called Contino. I probably would catch fire on my company Slack if I don't mention Contino.io as our homepage. So if you're looking to understand who we are and what we do, that's a good place to find out. You'll probably see me littered throughout that website. We operate in three specific regions globally, right? So we offer, I already mentioned, U.S. headquarters is in New York. Our world headquarters is based in London, in the UK, also known as England. And then Brad, I think you know this, but we're uniquely positioned in both Melbourne and Sydney, handling our APAC region. So my role, without sounding too ostentatious with titles and all the nonsense that lumped into that, I manage quite a few number of engagements in the U.S. market, and I should say North America, because I think that's officially what my title says. Much to my family's detriment, I'm on the road 4 to 5 days a week, typically five. I cover everything east of the Mississippi in the U.S., ranging from Toronto down to Florida, as far west as anything in Texas. We strategically haven't really taken too much further west of that. The west coast of the United States is its own ecosystem with its own consulting models. And right now my company is targeted towards the East Coast consulting. The original question, Brad, if you can hone me back in, because any listener knows I can go off on tangents.
I've lost it completely. But I actually asked whether the level that you're operating at matters, because it seems like you're at the extreme end of the stick.
Which extreme is that? Just to make sure I'm clear.
It sounds like you're doing a great deal more travel than even somebody that's locally situated. So if you're a team coach, an agile coach, your team coach, you're a consultant that's looking at teams, you might just operate in a single city because the organization that you're working with is in that city.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. That sounds absolutely lovely. No, like my, all right, so just to set context, my week, I think we either did this before we hit record, or maybe I said it earlier, but like my week usually gets dictated on Saturday or Sunday. I don't know where I'm going to be for the next 5 days. I usually don't even book travel or post into my company channels and saying where I'm going to be on which days until Saturday or Sunday. And at that point, I either reach out to the person that books our travel, or I do it myself and I say Monday I'll be in this city, Tuesday I'll be in this city, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and so on. It's super transient, and it's you know, like, so we're going off on a tangent, and I apologize, but like, humans are meant to be nomadic by history. If you look back at who we are and where we came from, we were very nomadic. And then somewhere around the 0 BC, we started setting down roots, and we really started setting up like community. And we sort of found a need for that community to establish like rituals and family and things like that. And I kind of have this sense in the last 10 to 15 years, we've started to re-embrace this nomadic sense. I can tell you two and everyone listening, I can live 5 to 7 days out of my backpack. And it's terrifying, right? Like, we shouldn't be able to do those things. Like, we need a sense of like home and base, and I have kids and I should see them more often. But the reality is, this work that we do is addicting, and uplifting the practices and the culture of these organizations we work with becomes part and parcel to what we establish as our essence and our family. And you blur the lines between that the good that you have at home with the good that you bring to your clients, if that makes any sense at all. And I'm sorry if I'm going too far deep.
No, it makes total sense.
Bring your whole self.
Yeah, you bring your whole self.
So to set context for me, I operate in a small boutique training company. We specialize in Scrum. I am a developer as well as a team coach, and our bases are two cities mainly, and we will branch out occasionally, but mostly we're centered around those. I stick fairly close to home. I live about an hour from Sydney, and that would be my main port of call. So I'm not being asked to travel all the time. I actually find it incredibly draining. I find the travel for me is go somewhere and be bored. I miss my family way too much to be completely on the road.
I did my road time many years ago. I probably did 7 years in working for other people before I branched out and became a consultant on my own. But back when I did it, it was 5 days a week. The collaborative tools that we have today really weren't quite there. And now I find myself back in the enterprise. So there's a period of time where I worked either for myself, small business, a couple of different small businesses, had a really good time, feast and famine type activity, and it was great. But then I probably came back 5 years ago into the enterprise world. And for the past year, I've been at SunTrust Bank, which is the largest transformation effort I think I've ever been involved in. And it's amazingly difficult and amazingly rewarding when good things happen.
Yeah. See, a lot of my experience has been in that smaller business space. So I've done time in the enterprise, but it was a while ago. I've worked in distributed companies, but most of my stuff recently has been local, especially over the last 5-6 years. It's just an interesting, it's another world, the people that travel all the time. Blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I can share with you guys this week alone. So again, I'm based in Philadelphia. For the global listeners, it's sort of like middle top of the East Coast of America. And the majority of my company's business is executed out of the New York region, which is about 2 hours north by train from Philly, and the Atlanta region, which is about 2.5 hours south by airplane. And I tend to cover both regions every week. This week in particular is kind of interesting because it's one of the it's typical in the fact that right now I'm in Atlanta, tomorrow I wake up and today I'm in New York. I wake up tomorrow, I scoot over to LaGuardia and I catch a flight down to Atlanta and I handle some accounts down there. But Friday is actually my youngest son's birthday, right? And you balance that servicing accounts, being a good corporate citizen, and also being like a husband and a father, right? And like, what does that mean? I mean, we can dig into this if you guys find it valuable about like the impact on family with
what does it mean? Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, even if you work at home, you don't necessarily have the right work-life balance. If you're doing the wonderful push to get something done, it's really easy to slip into a 10, 12-hour day, which isn't sustainable, but it's completely easy to do, especially if you're focused.
Yeah, so what's interesting is you said the word sustainable. And Brad, like, I've kind of, like, oscillated on that quite a bit because if you look at Twitter, I've seen it was a couple of weeks ago, there was quite a bit of tweets coming out of the folks in the Agile and the DevOps community talking about sustainable pace. And trust me, you know, even Paul and I today, completely outside of the podcast, were riffing on what sustainable pace means and how do we model that. I'm going to touch on that for a second. Then I'm going to jump straight into like the impact on family. Like, sustainable pace to me is different. We all pretend like sustainable pace is 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, right? Like that's what we've been conditioned to think sustainable pace means. I can tell you this, Monday to Thursday, when I'm on the road hardcore, my pace is not 8 hours. It's just not the reality. My pace is way more than 8 hours, especially if I'm working with clients that I love, if problems that I want to solve, with team members who I enjoy spending time with. I can spend 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day or more working on problems that I am completely addicted to. And that is sustainable because it's enjoyable for me. It's scratching an itch. If I artificially end at 8 hours, I will spend more mental capacity trying to solution problems outside of those 8 hours than if I just spent a little bit more time focusing on them. I'm separated from my family. I'm on the road. I'm either in my office, a client site, or in a hotel. So focusing time on solutioning in that space is way, way higher in the pace mode. So I just want to kind of call that out. Like, your pace is unique to you, and your pace isn't static. So like for me, if I'm working from home 40 hours a week.
Well done.
Yeah, I'm creating time. That's who I am.
But even from working from home, for me, like we're talking sustainable pace, it will vary from day to day. I might put in 10, 12 hours on one day because I've just gotten into a flow. I mean, if you're programming, you're in the zone, you don't want to lose the zone. But if the next day, maybe I'll put in 6 hours because that's what my brain can handle and it's just overloaded from the previous day. Or maybe I'll put in another 8 hours, or I might do that 3 or 4 days in a row and then have a slow time. Like, it ebbs and flows. It has to ebb and flow.
You just nailed it. Or like, I could be on the phone on a Sunday evening with a client talking through like problems for 2 hours. And, you know, maybe that's the point in time where they have 2 hours of focus time outside of their regular Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, where they're in meetings like all the time. You find your pace. And don't let anyone, I kind of feel frustrated when I see people dictating what your pace should be. Find your pace. Find what works for you. Find what works for your family. And that kind of leads into the next point of, like, there are entrapments on the road. And we'll just, like, probably touch on a very few number of them here. But, like, I found out early on. So I've been at this consulting gig for about 18 months now. And again, it's like 4 to 5 days a week. And I very quickly learned the mistake that it is to refer to your hotel as your home. Like, if you do the math, I spend more time in hotels than I do my house, right? Like, I tell people I live in Philly. But the reality is I spend 5 days not in Philly and 2 days a week in Philly itself. So when I was texting my wife or calling my wife and I'd say, hey, I'm headed back home. I'll call you in like 10 minutes. Your hotel is not your home. And she's constantly reminding me of that. So, I mean, like, there is this strange dichotomy and this weird reality that you create around the fact, like, I'm sitting here looking, I'm in a hotel room talking to you guys, looking at a bed. And this feels more normal to me at times. And if my wife listens to this, I will say at times, then when I go home and I wake up in my own house, because, you know, 70-80% of my life is this. It's roads, it's airplanes, it's trains, it's clients, it's not being in the nuclear family.
Maybe I'll edit that out for Emma. We'll have to decide. So we spent a lot of time talking about travel, and it is a big part of working in the world of transformation, because we're still, I think, exporting and sharing these experiences with companies, and even companies that have reached a certain level of, some people get offended by the word maturity, but I'm going to use it. You still want the cross-pollination of ideas, that even like going to conferences alone, we have Agile 2018 going on in San Diego right now, big, big event for the Agile community. But, you know, that's And there's conferences going on all the time, but it's not the same as inviting somebody into your organization to get that fresh perspective with experiences from somewhere else. So, I think road life is a big part for a consulting company, as well as if you're, I do think it's the higher levels too, like Brad was talking about. I know I'm just looking at SunTrust where I am now. Enterprise coaches do go to different cities because we do have employees in other cities and teams in other cities from where they're based in order to share their experience, do training and stuff like that. So that's part of the expertise, and spreading that expertise around puts you in a position probably more likely to travel.
I think I'd reflect that question back at you. Like, I mean, Paul, you manage a program that's larger than your home city. When you open that up to outsiders, or when you open that up to internal coaches from outside the region, what vulnerabilities do you face, right? Like, you're a guy based in the headquarters of SunTrust Bank, but you look for outside help, either outside in the format of internal coaching or outside in the format of consulting companies.
Yeah, no, that's vulnerabilities a good one. Thanks for the reflection there. The biggest challenge I am facing right now is how to spread engagement globally. I am based in Atlanta. A large percentage of our enterprise information services folks are in Atlanta. They are the majority of who I work with. I get the pleasure occasionally to work with the quote unquote business side of the house, but being on the DevOps angle of transformation, or DevSecTeraOps, as I like to call it, I do touch more tech. And getting that engagement to not always just be on Skype, and to find the opportunity to get some FaceTime with people from other offices and to get their engagement and get their spark going, that's a challenge. Banks have kind of narrow margins. The cost consciousness is there. You know, forgive me for my listeners who are involved with my company. Sometimes it's a little penny wise, pound foolish, right? Like the impact of, hey, let's have a little travel budget. Let's get people together a little bit more often versus having to rely on technology like Skype and Zoom and chat and stuff like that. This culture stuff is hard, and nothing beats face-to-face for at least lighting the fire. And then when I think you've got the fire lit, you can sustain longer term relationship. My right arm is an employee of mine who works out of Richmond, and she and I have figured out how to stay engaged very well, but we see each other 4 or 5 times a year. But to do that on the entire organization, to reach new people, like you come into contact with new people and your entire exposure to them is through Skypes and phone calls and emails and chats and stuff like that. It's tough.
So one of the better engagements that I have going right now within my portfolio of accounts is one where we're working with a global insurance technology company, and even my team. So again, we're an outside consulting company. We bring in like a global perspective on, and this is legitimately an agile/DevOps/cloud transformation. We're working on the global operating model of a large organization, and we're doing it 100% remote. Now, I'm not going to say this is like the model that everybody should follow. You have to appreciate where the client is and where they're trying to go and all that good stuff. But it is interesting to see the when you take a sober look at the maturity of the organization, and you look at the, you know, the operating model that you're starting from, where you're going, how distributed teams really does like weigh in on that transformation journey. That said, I completely appreciate, again, 17 years working in the enterprise space. I know what it's like. Where are we at? We're in August on the calendar in the U.S. Specifically, fiscal years tend to follow the calendar year. So we're entering the fourth quarter. This is when travel gets locked down. This is when, you know, training gets long. This is when all of the things that you need to really coalesce a team around gets shut down. And it's difficult to build that sense of community. So been there, felt that, done that. And it's
is your current client like the International Space Station? I mean, to do it all remote.
I don't know. I'm sure they have insurance on the International Space Station, but it is not. It's definitely not Tesla, because apparently they're going private again. So it's not them either.
So you both touched on the relationship aspect in the last couple of minutes. I can see that there would be a difference between the consultant space, if we bring it back to that, and the employee space. As a consultant, you're brought in for a reason. You're brought in often on the hour or on the day. That means you need to establish relationship very quickly. You need to establish relationship that's meaningful, and there's a certain degree of trust. How hard is that? How do you deal with that different scenario?
Jump in first.
That's only a good question.
So my current engagement actually started as a consultant, and it was a surprise to find a full-time role to step into.
Okay.
And it's interesting, and I've seen this go different ways, but at this particular organization, I almost feel like it was in some ways easier to be a consultant in this environment, because there was a listening to you as, okay, somebody listened to us. Somebody helped me tell management or this other group that I'm working with that you know, this is the way it is around here. It's almost like I call it like the marriage counselor phenomenon. You've got two people that are supposed to be getting along, and they're right next to each other, and they're not going to talk to each other unless you're present to help mediate the thing. After becoming an employee, you're listened to differently. Like, you're just one of us now. So it was interesting. Instead of it being difficult to establish rapport, I think people were hungry for change and welcomed the opportunity for an outsider to help facilitate that versus an insider. Does that make sense?
You're brought in with a certain level of, for want of a better word, authority. You're seen as an authority figure when you're brought in to look at, judge, listen, all the bits and pieces, but you still have to break through to the individuals. Like, so there has to be a certain level of trust that you bring with you as well. Because, you know, consultants have in the past been given a really bad name, regardless of the field, change management, your sales guys that come in, your vendors, whatever. Because they are seen as coming in with an agenda, how do you overcome that sort of thing?
So if I can jump in, the way that I address that is pretty straightforward and sounds simple on the surface. And then the more you unpack it, the more I think it actually resonates. Like, there, in my opinion, traditionally speaking, and Brad, that's I think kind of where you were heading with the question, is there seems to be two different facets of consulting or contracting organizations. And I say that specifically. You have your traditional management consulting companies that talk a lot in PowerPoint. They talk a lot about change management and transformation management and things of that nature. And they're very much management consulting organizations. They talk in terms of 2, 3, 4 year plans. Like, they roll out roadmaps and strategic intent. And they say how they're going to bring you to the promised land of milk and honey in X number of years, right? Like, that's one end of the extreme. The other end of the extreme.
Absolutely. Or the spill and fill variety as well, you know, coming in, wield the axe.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. And then the other end of the extreme is the complete staff augmentation, right? Like, okay, your biggest problem is you have all of these thinkers and none of these doers. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring in all of these doers that have tactical level skills, and they're going to execute against the great strategies that your thinkers have created. My opinion is that you to actually see transformation happen, you either need an internal or an external agency that understands the human dynamics of change, the organizational dynamics of change. The only language that speaks to the people that matter is actual, tangible results. You need to put wins on the board. So you need to execute technical expertise at the team, program, and portfolio levels in the form of uplift. And that happens either through capability, through delivery. In best case scenario, you're talking about business value, business strategy, outcome-based delivery in a local format. Now, I understand we're talking to lean and agile experts on this podcast. So there's an argument to be said, Ryan, you're talking about sub-optimizing teams or sub-optimizing organizations. And yes, you're right. But social proof is a thing. If you can demonstrate value at a team level or a portfolio level or a program level, and then start horizontally scaling that operating model against the organization, you can actually bring a change culture to that organization. And that's really what I'm after when I work with organizations. It's not literally about, you know, just coming in and taking the highest performing team with the lowest business value outcome on the roadmap and saying, see, look, we stacked the odds in our favor and we brought this to fruition. No, it's about taking a cross section of the organization and showing a new way of working that creates social proof and says, hey, if we can do it here, we can do it anywhere, and then start scaling that horizontally. So if you're thinking of a Venn diagram, it's literally the intersection and the inflection point of strategic thinking with tactical delivery. That's the space where change happens, in my opinion.
I'm big on showing something of value frequently. And these small wins add up, right? These small wins add up. And to play the long game and nothing but the long game, faith starts to wane. You look at the money that's being spent. You look at this big long trough. I mean, we're bouncing around, and I'm going to do it again. It's why I like Kanban so much. It's small changes, small J curves, building up to ultimately a big change. But it's little changes that all add up, not the big bang, right?
Yep. 1,000,000% theory of constraints. we're on the wave together, brother.
I love the conversation around the challenges, but I want to bring us home to what makes it different being an employee versus being a consultant, because that was the thread that struck a nerve. And again, we're going to have part two. We may have part three, because we're having a great conversation, but I'm not sure we're getting at the distinction of what makes the transformation different, the challenges different, being in one set of shoes versus another. One of them that I think we're dancing around is when do you show value? So you've been here, you've been burning some money. We see that, right? I'm paying the invoices every month or whatever. Especially in American enterprise, fiscal, quarterly, annual budget type thinking, it's time to renew the budget again. It's time to go for another tranche of money. Well, what'd you do with the money you got last time is the internal question that's asked.
So I'll take a swing at that particular topic, Paul. And then I think, Brad, I may need you to help me just to rebase me on the original question. But I mean, for me,
tensions.
I'm going to need it in about 2 minutes after I'm done talking. For me, when I left the enterprise, when I left an FTE position and came into consulting, the reason I chose Contino as the company I wanted to work with was their unique perspective on how they handle initial statements of work with clients. And for those that aren't familiar, I feel like it's valuable. Like if you look back at some of the interviews that we've done with Josh Karievsky and Modern Agile, or if you go back and listen to what we did with Mary Poppendick, or even with Martin Fowler and Bob Martin and some of the other luminaries in our space, we often talked about continuously creating value in small increments, right? Yep. Like that's the tracer bullet that runs through all of those conversations. When I came to Contino, I was 17 years deep into enterprise space. I was on management tracks and told that, you know, I would work my way from manager to director, director to VP, VP to senior VP, EVP, all that stuff. And time scales were in years, right? When I had my first conversation with Contino, the conversation was around months, right? Like we typically write our first statement of work with a new client in the enterprise, highly regulated space, typically financial services or insurance or telco or healthcare or something like that, in the construct of 3 months, right? And any organization, specifically consulting organization, that's willing to say, hey, we're going to bring you value not just in those 3 months, but we're going to constantly demonstrate value throughout that 3 month delivery, is one where they're either completely insane or know what they're doing. And I'm just crazy enough to take the gamble on that. And 17 years deep into my career, I said, okay, if these guys are going to put their name out there to say, hey, we're going to start demonstrating value to these enterprise clients in these small increments, then I'm just dumb enough to roll with it. Let's do that. So for me, the jump into consulting and demonstrating value in small increments spoke specifically to the rhythm of my life. Like that's who I am as a practitioner. That's who I want to be. I think that, and you can take consulting out of that conversation. Throughout the longevity of my career working with teams, we should be constantly demonstrating and producing value in small increments. And small is intentionally abstract in when I say it. 3 months, I think, in large, heavily regulated organizations, most listeners that are in that space, in that context, will nod their head and say 3 months is small. If you're in a startup, if you're in a relatively small organization, 3 months may seem like an eternity. So then redefine that language for yourself, right? So, Brad, I know that I missed the original intent of your question.
It was, what's the natural tensions that arise? So if you're a consultant, like one of the ones I see is if you've got you're trying to get the next gig. So you've got that sales tension. But if you're in an organization in an implementation, you don't want to be seen as selling as such. You're there to add value, not necessarily to sell for the next thing. So that's a tension. There's a tension of time. Yep. There's always a tension of time. Your time is their money. Sometimes though, for a team to truly get something, they need to get it themselves. And your job is not, whilst you're there to provide solutions, your job is not always there to give the solutions. It's to lead them to the solutions. But if you've against time, it's hard. Like that's one of the tensions I see. And I'm really young in my journey on this, so I'm still figuring it out. But they're just things that make sense. Like if you're being asked to solve a problem, you should probably solve the problem. But how you do that makes a big difference. And I'd be guessing is when you come in with the consultant mindset versus the employee mindset, because you're on a per diem or you're on a per hour basis, there's a pressure there to solve when you shouldn't necessarily. It's not the best optimal
solution.
One
thing that I see a lot of consulting. So a lot of times when my organization comes into a company, it's not their first dance with a consulting company. And I want to say it's nobody's fault, and I'm probably reaching when I say that, but a lot of times it's human nature to focus on symptoms and not root causes, right? And it's easy for me to say that. It's hard for, specifically in the consulting space where you're being paid an hourly or a daily rate to help expose problems and then solution for those problems. a lot of times the people that are paying you are at least contributing to the problems that you're asked to solve for. So it takes a very crafty and experienced person to really just shine a light on the true problem space and not the symptom space without getting kicked out of an account. If the intentions are to resolve problems, you're in a healthy position and you can move forward from there because it's a blameless economy.
Yep.
But when you talk about tensions in the space, I also like, so this is kind of where I get myself in a little bit of trouble as a consultant. Most consultancies, if they're being genuine in what they're supposed to be solving for, they should be working themselves out of a job from day one. Any consultancy that's looking to hook in and hold on to a company for, you know, let's just say 2 to 3 years, they're going in there with disingenuous, if that's a word, pretenses. When I work with organizations, the intention is to teach them how to fish so that they don't need a fisherman to lead them going forward. When you talk about tension, the tension is around, are we staffing our teams appropriately, right? Like that conversation should be had at the company level, not the consulting level. All right, do you have the right people? Are you building a feeder system so that you have upskilling and you have capability uplift as part of the lifeblood of the organization? Like, make no mistake about it, there is a significant level of time that my organization spends on teaching organizations how to properly recruit for skills. Probably a completely different topic for a show, but like, enterprise recruiting is a problem. The paradigm of buyers versus sellers market has completely shifted in the technology space, and a lot of organizations don't want to accept that. And that adds to tech debt, that adds to missed delivery, that adds to just open rec staying in place for, you know, 6, 8, 9, 12, 18 months. Like, let's be honest about it. So those are some of the tensions that we see, just the ability to accept the reality that they're starting from, whether we're focusing in on symptoms versus root causes, and if we're properly staffing engagements and modeling for outcomes that we're looking for. And you know what? The cherry on the top, which is often overlooked, are we talking in terms of business return or are we talking in technical return? We talk to a lot of people on this podcast about technical return, building in excellence and things of that nature. There are zero executives and zero C-levels and zero board members that actually care about the reduction of technical debt. As much as Paul and I have a bleeding heart for DevOps, automation, infrastructure as code, compliance as code, no. None of those personas give a damn about any of those things.
Absolutely.
What are you doing to influence my What are you doing to influence my ROI? What are you doing to influence my total cost of ownership? In my opinion, consultants, either at the external or internal level, are masters at solving those tensions. Those are the real tensions at play. If I fund a project for $5 million, that's not a problem if you give me $20 million of return. But if I fund a project for $5 million and I get $1 million of return, that's a massive problem. Let's have an honest conversation in that space rather than around the cost. It's the shift. Like, when we talk about the tension around IT as a cost center versus IT as a value center, we need to be talking about that shift of conversation around return on investment. And to me, the best consultants in the world are the ones that are able to shepherd and facilitate that conversation.
You know, it's really interesting that we started this topic as challenges in the world of transformation, consultant versus employee, but I keep hearing in our discussion, in our thinking, that I'm not so sure there are a huge amount of differences. It really is. We keep coming back to the challenges of transformation, whether you're, I call them blue badgers at SunTrust because we wear blue security badges. All right. So if you're a blue badger or not, you really have the same challenges. We actually do have the challenge of selling new business. We have to get funding every year. It's a major ordeal at a large enterprise such as ours. It's not that dissimilar to the times I've worn the hat as a consultant, right? So that's there in the back of your mind. At the same time, you have to deliver value in order to be invited to get that next snoot full of money, whether you're a consultant or a full-time employee. So maybe the differences aren't that huge. Yeah, go for it.
Like, just to be honest, there is a value not just to transformation, and there's a value to the ROI and all that. There is a non-zero amount of value to marketing. And I think oftentimes in the delivery, consulting, full-time, external mode, we overlook the XP principles around shared values. And I know that I'm bastardizing it right now, but understanding why we're doing the things that we're doing. And I think a lot of times marketing comes into play. How do we communicate with executives, external stakeholders, internal stakeholders, and others about why we're doing what we're doing? And I think as practitioners, creating that collective ownership of messaging is a critical success factor to contributing to the outcomes of the engagements that we're working on. And, you know, Paul, you and I have had plenty of offline conversations about this, about like, how do we get all of our stakeholders in line as to why we're doing these things or what the value is and everything along those lines. That's what we're talking about. We're like, you and I will probably never say this offline, but we're being recorded now. We're honestly talking about marketing. How can we build a movement behind the things that we value internally so there's a shared understanding of outcome? I'm curious, you know, we're probably dialing in at the end of the show here, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
It is marketing, but it's not marketing for the sake of marketing. It's, at the end of the day, it is a business. I mean, I don't have experience working for a nonprofit, and I get that Agile's spreading everywhere. My experience is in the whole good old capitalism universe of, you know, what matters is cheaper, better, faster, cheaper, better, faster. And so there has to be a return on investment. So when we talk about marketing, it's making sure that you're demonstrating that you're on the way to that happening, or that you've actually accomplished it. To do it in a laboratory somewhere and not let anybody know about it, it's going to be brushed to the side. So I get where you're going, but it's definitely not marketing for the sake of marketing. I do think that there is a difference with employee versus consultant there, especially the high-end, high-paid consulting companies where the dollars per hour seem a little weird maybe to the novice that looks at it and goes, wow, that seems like a large number. But don't forget the company's backed by marketing and people that are behind the scenes with overhead that are making that consultant extremely efficient and able to communicate and demonstrate the value that's being delivered. Whereas back home, we've got to muster those resources together internally when it's the employee realm. But either way, you do have to market that you're on the right path, or admit that you're on the wrong path, learn from it, and do something different.
Yep.
We bounced around a lot. This has been a good conversation. I want to give everybody a chance to talk about how we can continue the conversation individually with those of us who are on this cast, and remind our listeners that we really do want your feedback from this one. We want your feedback all the time, but we want to continue the conversation. So podcast.agileuprising.com/contact would be a way for you to chime in on what you've heard today. Maybe try to get us focused on the question that we originally asked, right? Is like, what's the challenges of working in the world of transformation that differ when you're a consultant versus your full-time employee?
Don't forget the coalition as well. I mean, there are quite a few of us that will just hang out there. A lot of people lurk. Not everybody posts. Ask a question. There's some fantastic depth available in the community there as well.
Absolutely. Coalition.agileuprising.com is a community where we discuss these kinds of things. And we also have Twitter at Agile Uprising. Ryan, I know you guys have Twitters. I'm just going to go ahead and say it for you guys. You're at _Lockard, L-O-C-K-A-R-D. Brad, you're at Brad Stokes. Nice, easy name. And mine is Paul_B_Elia. The only social media property that I didn't get my full name on, or you can hit me at paulelia.com. Ryan, you're ryanlocker.com. Brad, what's your website?
Actually, I don't have a personal website. If you want me, LinkedIn is actually a good place to grab me.
And there you go. And I cheated because my paulelia.com right now, I think, reroutes to either Twitter or LinkedIn because I'm lazy and haven't submit my site.
Yeah, if somebody wants to talk to me, hit me on the coalition. They'll definitely get me there.
Cool. So, thanks again, everybody, for this conversation. And thanks to you for our listening audience. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe to future episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcasting platform of choice. Please give us a review. It really helps us to reach others and improve the show. Finally, we want to let you know that we do accept support from our listeners through Patreon. We have patreon.com/agileuprising. $5 gets you a high five. If you want to do more, that's awesome. And we appreciate everybody for listening. Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising signing out.